Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 24th, 2010. This is episode 712. Enjoy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater and all the cool jazz and gizmos that make up this digital world of ours. My phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A, 8888-ASK. Leo. If you're outside the USA, you just call plus 1-888-827-5536 from say, Skype out. That'll be toll-free, and then you don't have to pay for that, which is good, because I'm going to keep you on hold for a while, because we have five lines, and I'm slow. I take my time. I'm what's known classically as a windbag, which is normally, you know, not a good thing, but it's a great thing if you're a talk radio host. Especially if, as most of us are in the beginning, you're not a very good talk radio host and you can't get any calls. It's a good thing to be able to talk for a long time about nothing. So that's an occupational hazard, which my wife and family will tell you extends out into the rest of my life as well. We'll talk about something today. There's actually something very interesting to talk about today. Apple, this was a big week for Apple in a couple of ways. First of all, they had a fantastic quarter, and their analyst call said, you know, this is as usual. In fact, I would say in every quarter for the last year or so, Apple's had fantastic quarters. Their stock price now at, over $300 a share. A few years ago, it was in the 20s, 27, 28. Well, I bet a few of you wish you'd bought Apple stock back then. You'd be worth 10 times more. I do not allow myself to buy tech stocks for two reasons. One, because of course it's an ethical conflict of interest, because then I would have a vested interest in the success of and failure of some companies that I cover. Two, because when I did buy tech stocks many moons ago, I was so bad at predicting what was going to happen that I lost my shirt. And I like having a shirt. You would like me to have a shirt. You don't want to see me without a shirt. So I'm not going to buy any more tech stocks. I've learned my lesson. It's hard to predict. Every once in a while, somebody come up to me. I remember 15 years ago, a guy drove up in a Rolls Royce. Get out. Looking very posh. Said, I just want you to know, I want to thank you for that Rolls Royce. I said, me? He said, yes, because you, when the zip drives, this is how long ago that was, when the zip drives came out, you told us how great they were on your radio show. And I said, I better buy some of that iOmega stock. And he did. And I said, well, I hope you sell it. And I was right there, too, because it ain't going to last. I hope he still has that Rolls Royce. It's one thing to know when to get in. It's a whole nother kettle of fish to know when to get out, isn't it? However, and that's the problem. You see, you look at the Apple earnings this quarter, and you go, wow, they are doing so well. And that's the wrong, isn't that the wrong time to buy a stock is when it's at a peak? Isn't the rule buy low, sell high? So they're at the high, you know, they're the highest they've been in ages, and you want to buy now? I don't think so. $20 billion in revenue in the quarter, $4 billion in after-tax earnings, both all-time records for Apple. No wonder their stock's so high. And the success, of course, comes mostly from the sales, not of computers, but of portable devices, iPhones, iPods, iPads. iPhone sales, 14.1 million iPhone 4s were sold. So you could forget all the talk about, oh, antenna gate, and they scratch and the glass breaks. Steve Martin tweeted, Apple made this great product, made it perfectly, and then they said, let's make it glass and slippery. But that's not deterring people from buying it. 91% increase in iPhone sales from the 3GS last year. 91%, almost doubled. And this was the big surprise, Steve Jobs gets on the conference call and reads a scripted statement in which he lambastes Android, which of course tells you who he thinks the big competition is, and says, nobody wants a 7-inch tablet. That's hardware manufacturers talking. They're not thinking about software folks. Software folks are just going to take a pass because they said, oh, I'm not going to develop for that. It's too complicated. Well, you know, when you hear Steve talk, there's two points of view to take. Well, there's probably many, but I take two different points of view. Point of view one is Steve is a masterful businessman and strategist. And in the past, he said things like, well, no one will ever want to watch video on a small screen. This shortly before Apple released iPods with video. He said, no one will want to read a book on a portable device. It's shortly before Apple released the iPad. So Steve is not above doing something that the tech industry calls FUD, spreading fear, uncertainty, and doubt amongst the competition. Misdirection, a magician might call it. Pay no attention to this hand. Look over here. Look over here. So some say, oh, Steve's saying 7-inch tablets are terrible. Some say is a sure sign. Some serious people say is a sure sign that's what Apple's going to do next. So you can view what Steve Jobs says with that hat on. And I think both hats are right, by the way. With the hat of this man is a master strategist. He's thinking four steps ahead of the opposition, of the competition. He's playing them like a fiddle. So anything he says, you take with a grain of salt. When he says, I love this. He says, Android's not open. He's talking about the Google phone operating. It's not open. Open. Now, you got to understand, there's probably many different definitions of open. When I think of open, I think of open source. That's the original open, where a user can look at the program, modify it to his heart's consent, create his own version and distribute it. And there are various open source licenses that some require you just, if you do that, you have to make your version open and so forth. So that's one kind of open. Open, another kind of open is open so that anybody can develop for it. Anyone who wants to can write a program for it. See, the iPhone is not open by any of those definitions. The iPhone is a closed system, which Apple, you know, all the software on the iPhone, unless you jailbreak it, it has to be approved by Apple, has to follow very rigid guidelines. No one else can make an iPhone. No one else can modify the source code or the software. I mean, that's the in any sense of the word, the opposite of open. But Steve, he's very interesting. He says, no, we're open. It's Android that's closed. He says, Windows was open. We're open. Android is not open. It's fragmented. Now, this, I think you have to say, is fear, uncertainty, and doubt. This is misdirection. This makes no sense in any universe that I'm aware of. It's gobbledygook. Black is white. Truth is fiction. Closed is open. It doesn't make any sense. So that's one hat. That's the Steve Jobs as businessman hat. But everybody who knows Steve, and I don't count myself in that group, but everybody who knows Steve says that really all Steve really cares about is making great products. And we see that. I mean, he has a very, you know, in this industry, an incredible track record. Not 100%. He's made some bad products. He's made some bad mistakes. But for the most part, he's made amazing products. And this is what he cares about. And sometimes I think maybe he makes a mistake. I think the iPhone 4 is an example. Obviously, it's selling well. But it's an example of maybe liking design a little too much and saying, well, I don't care if it's slippery and breaks easily and that the antenna's on the outside. And so it doesn't, you know, but it's beautiful. Look how pretty. It's kind of ironic because he made a gorgeous phone that we really pretty much have to put a case on and hide or it will break and not work. But it's gorgeous. And I think that's a case of Steve maybe loving design a little too much, saying, oh, it's a gorgeous product. I love this. It's got to look like this. And it does, you know, And apparently that's not held people back from buying it. It's been the most successful product Apple's ever had, probably. 14.1 million in 3 months. Beating RIM. Some debate. Steve says we're beating Android. Some debate over whether Android or iPhones are better selling. That it doesn't matter, right? That's the horse race. That doesn't matter. So you can put the second hat you could put on Steve, the second way you can interpret it, Steve, and it's as valuable to do this, is as a man who just has a vision and wants to create the best possible product and doesn't really care what anybody thinks, including, you know, his own people. In fact, four words you will never hear from Steve Jobs. Four words you will never hear from Steve Jobs. What do you think? No, he's not going to ask that. It's always, what do I think? Right? But that's fine. That's what makes him a great visionary and creator. So when he says things like Android is fragmented and Windows is open and iPhone is open, you can interpret it from a business point of view, but you might not. It's a worthwhile exercise to say, maybe Steve, from the point of view of a product, maybe Steve looks at 7-inch tablets like the BlackBerry Playbook, which is what this was, and the Android tablets, the Samsung Tab, which these are obviously what he's aiming his barbs at. These new tablets that are coming out that are 7 inches. Maybe what he's saying is, I've tried them, I've looked at that size, and in my personal opinion, I really feel that that's too small. If you want small, you need an iPhone. Next size up, the iPad. You want a keyboard and a mouse that's new, these new MacBook Airs, which are, of course, gorgeous. So Steve's got this very clear vision, and it's, I think, instructive to look at what he says with both points of view. As a great businessman and strategist, and as a product visionary. And you get something from both points of view, I think. It's very interesting to see what Steve announced. Now, on Wednesday, Apple had an event that may change the world of computing. We'll talk about that, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to take some calls, and we'll come back and talk about Apple's big announcements on Wednesday. I mean, I'll summarize. They talked about the new operating system, Tiger. Did I say Tiger? Liger. Did I say Liger? I mean Lion. It'll come out summer 2011. They talked about the new MacBook Airs, which are gorgeous, and I immediately ordered one. We'll see. You know, I ordered the cheapest one they had, the $1,000 one, which is a 10-inch. It's tiny. And it weighs like less than, it's tiny. It's their netbook, but it's an expensive netbook. But I can't wait to see that. And I should get that on Monday because I ordered it right away. I ordered it overnight, but, you know, it'll come Monday, unfortunately. I was hoping to get it by today. If I'd gone to the Apple stores, I think they have them in the Apple stores. I could have. But I just, you know, I ordered it online. They announced a new iLife package, which looks nice, you know. But the big story, I think, and the thing that may change computing is they announced an app store for OS X. And I'm going to talk about why that concerns me. It could not be bad. It could be very good. It could be fine. But I'm a little nervous. And I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But I don't want to put off calls too much. So we'll get some calls, and then maybe next hour we'll talk about what I think Apple might be up to. And it's the Steve Jobs product and businessman hat. It's good for both. Just not good for you. Zach in West Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Zach. Oh, wait a minute. I have to push the button. Hey, Zach, how are you?
Hey, Leo, how about you?
Wonderful. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
And I have a really important email question. I've been on Gmail, I've been on Hotmail and others, but I really want to set it up properly or use a new service to get everything in sync on an iPad, a BlackBerry, a MacBook Pro at home, and a PC at work, where every email that's been read shows it's been read, everyone that's answered, every sent folder, drafts, and so forth, has everything in sync, and I can't run an Exchange server.
Okay. You got the right idea, which is the only way to do that is not to use PopMail, which is what most people use, Post Office Protocol. It's what most internet service providers offer. And it's the mail. You'll know you have PopMail. It's the mail where you get your mail, downloads it from the server, then deletes it on the server, and you have a copy, one copy, on your hard drive. And that's what most people do. And the reason most internet service providers use it is it takes the minimum amount of space on the their servers. In fact, many of them have 10, man, this is kind of almost laughable, 10 megabyte limits on the inbox, which is like nothing nowadays. That's one attachment. So that's one kind of mail. But you got it. What you want is a server-based solution. One is Exchange. The other is IMAP. IMAP is not owned by Microsoft. It's an industry standard. It's not as functional as Exchange. For instance, Exchange also supports contacts and calendars. IMAP does not.
Right.
But IMAP is exactly what you just described. What happens is the mail is stored on your provider's servers forever. It never gets deleted. When you read a message, it marks it red on the server. When you send a message, it puts it in the sent mailbox on the server. When you save something on as a draft, it gets saved there. And then when you log in on any other machine, even a machine you've never used before, and you log into your email server, and you can use, by the way, you don't have to, it's not just web-based. You can use Microsoft Outlook. You can use Apple's mail program. You can use Thunderbird. Most mail programs support IMAP. Immediately, as soon as you log in, that server structure, the folder structure, what's in the sent box, all gets duplicated on your local computer. So
calendars and contacts, you can't get that without Exchange.
You can't. And that's where Exchange comes in. Now, here's the good news. A number of companies, and I think Google is probably the one I would recommend, support Exchange as well as IMAP. So if you have all your contacts in Google, in the Gmail, if you have a Gmail account, if you have a Google Calendar, and you use Exchange to synchronize on the iPhone, the iPad, I believe Outlook will work. Google looks like an Exchange server to those and will synchronize contacts, calendar, as well as mail.
But that still requires, doesn't that require an ASP and an application service provider that...
No. Google's your application service provider. Google does it all.
At no...
No charge. Free.
So you just have to get their settings for Outlook, for Thunderbird, for the BlackBerry.
Right. When you set it up on an iPhone, instead of setting it up as a Gmail, you know, you go to the mail accounts. Instead of setting up as a Gmail account, you set it up as an Exchange account using m.google.com as the server.
I see. Okay, that makes more sense. Now, Leo,
and then when you set it up, it says there's three little checkboxes that say, okay, you want me to sync calendar? Yeah. You want me to sync contacts? Yeah. You want me to sync mail? And you can say yes or no. It's the same. Exchange and IMAP are functionally identical.
Leo, I was just in a focus group this week from one of the major cell providers. Do you want to know what they were testing, what they were
asking? As long as it's not violating any agreement you made.
Sir, there is one of the carriers is about to launch the biggest, fastest 4G, according to their ad copy. They've got 4G tablets ready to go from Dell. They've got phones from Samsung and others. And video conferencing is the main selling point they're trying to put out to the general public. If you were to venture a guess, who would it be?
Well, we know Verizon's doing LTE and probably all of those things. But since you are asking me to guess, I'm guessing it's not Verizon because that's the obvious answer. Who is it?
It's T-Mobile.
T-Mobile, yeah. T-Mobile's very aggressive. They have something called HSPA Plus. Which is, it's kind of a stealth product. I think people don't know about it. It's a fast, they claim, as fast as LTE or Clearwire, the 4Gs from Verizon and Sprint, respectively. That's very interesting. I'm not surprised, but you know what? It's not, here's the deal. Yeah, it's T-Mobile, and it's going to be everybody else. This next year is going to be a fascinating time for high-speed data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at Citrix. who make a great product for folks who were in the support business, IT or software support. It's called Go to Assist Express. You could try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number every day at this time. We like to check in with our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, our guru from the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com. He's also a columnist at the Home Theater Magazine, hometheatermag.com. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Happy Sunday to you.
Happy Sunday to you, too. So before we get into questions, and I know you have some from our audience, you have an event coming up.
I do. I'd like everyone listening in L.A. to know that I'm in a new band, which plays Balkan brass music.
Oh, and I thought it was the Rolling Stones. They need shofar, you know, in the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, they do. It's true. No, I'm playing euphonium, which is a small tuba, in this brass band called Rakia. And we're playing a gig this Tuesday night at Troop Church. That's T-H-R-O-O-P, Troop Church in Pasadena, for the Caltech Folk Dancing Club. And it's their Halloween party.
So they're going to be dressed as Vulcans while you perform Balkan music.
Precisely.
Sounds like fun.
It's a freebie. No cost to get in. They will ask you for a donation because they need some funding to keep their thing going. But basically, if you want to see Caltech-inspired costumes, which they should be astonishing, I myself will probably be wearing my wizard suit. So.
Oh,
and I don't think I will say, "You shall not pass."
Okay, Gandalf.
Somebody in the chat room asked me to do that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. When I was at South by Southwest, I had a wizard's staff with a camera on, and I tried that. It didn't work.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Did it work?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh.
The whatever it was got through anyway. So let's answer some questions from our audience.
Let's, please. Let's see. I have got, Jeff Kramer asked, can I get high definition video in zone 2 from an AVR, audio video receiver?
Oh, you better explain this. High definition video, I understand. What's zone 2?
Okay. Many AVRs or audio video receivers now have the ability, and have for a while, to send one program image and sound to the main, what's called the main zone. Say you have it in your home theater.
Mm-hmm.
But they can also, so you probably have a couple of things hooked up to your AV receiver. You might have a Blu-ray player. You might have a cable box, a DVR. You might have a gaming system, a variety of things hooked up to this AVR. And you can send any one of them. You can pick whichever one you want to go to your main system. But there are many AVRs that let you select a different source and send it to a remote zone, what's called a remote zone. What that means really only is another room in the house. So while one person is watching a Blu-ray in the main zone, somebody in the second zone or remote room might be watching the cable box or playing a game even. And you have to, of course, get audio and video to that remote zone. And a lot of these AVRs only send standard definition by means of the composite video connection or sometimes the S video connection. These are the older connections that are still on virtually all AV receivers. But this fellow wanted to know about, can I get high definition into the second zone, into the remote room? And he also asked if the new AVRs convert component video, which is the other way, it's the analog high definition connection, to HDMI, which is the digital high definition connection. Well, the answer to the first question is there are AV receivers that send high definition to the second zone. They aren't common, and they are the more expensive ones. So you've got to kind of keep that in mind. The higher-end models from Integra, Pioneer, and Sony do have high-definition video outputs to the second zone, and they can carry a different source device, which is really very important. There are a few AVRs that also have multiple outputs, but they all carry the same signal. So if someone's watching a Blu-ray in the main room, the second room is also going to be showing that same Blu-ray. So that's not that useful. But being able to send one thing one place and another thing another place, that's very useful. So these models from Integra, Pioneer, and Sony can do that. Sony has the added advantage of sending that information over Cat 5. I think we were talking last week about Cat 5, right? That how this type of cable, you can send stuff much farther than you can over HDMI. So Sony made a brilliant move, in my opinion, which was to place a second zone output or a remote room output and use Cat 5 connector instead of component, which is what these other devices will use. And that can run hundreds of feet. In the second zone, you connect up a little thing called a balun. I think we might have talked about those a week or two ago as well.
Short for balanced, unbalanced.
Ah, yes, just like modem.
Yeah.
Modulate, demodulate, right. same kind of contraction. I don't think I knew that. So
I didn't either. My brains told me that. My chat room told me that yesterday.
Ah, there you go.
Because we were talking about that exact thing, taking HDMI to Ethernet,
right,
and back again. It's all analog, or it's all digital.
Hmm?
But it's a balanced to an unbalanced, and then balanced again, I guess, or something.
Right, like exactly. Yeah. So at the other end, you have this balun. It connects to Cat 5, and then on the other side of that little device is a component, which is of three cables, actually, normally kind of fused together, but there are three separate connectors on RCA jacks, and then that's what you connect to the TV. Now, the HD that goes to that second zone is usually limited to 1080i. You can't send 1080p, partly because of copy protection restrictions, partly because it requires more bandwidth. And the Sony is the only one that will take an HDMI input and send it out to that second zone, down converting it to 1080i. All the other receivers that do this will only send devices that are connected to the receiver by component video to begin with. So that is a limitation there. And I'm sure, again, it has to do with copy protection and all that kind of stuff. So that is the answer to that question. And there are plenty of receivers will convert component video to HDMI, but only the Sony will go the other way and convert HDMI to component in order to send it to the second zone.
We had a caller yesterday that, I don't know if I want to get into this. Never mind. it was a related question about, this was about sending data over coax. So it was similar idea, but you did need to do some conversion. Hey, we got to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, one more question.
You bet.
All right. Scott Wilkinson is here. He is our home theater wizard, columnist for the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, columnist for Home Theater Magazine, ultimateavmag.com. And if you want to ask a question, scott@techilabs.com. And we'll get back to, you want to tease what the next question is about so people can get excited?
Sure. Are two subs better than one?
Oh, those big bass subwoofers.
Big bass subwoofers.
Big bass subwoofers. Well, boy. Before we continue, though, I want to talk about backup from my friends at Carbonite. We've talked about this before. In fact, it comes up all the time because people call me and say, oh, Leo, oh, I was a bad person. I've lost my hard drive and I don't have a backup. What can I do? And all I can say is, I'm sorry. There's not much you can do if you don't back up. So you got to be proactive with backup. There's nothing you can do after the fact. And that's where Carbonite is so great, because you don't have to remember to back up. It's automatic. Once you install the Carbonite software, it just happens. Dr. Mom, who is one of our chatters and Carbonite fan now, says she was showing people the remote restore, and they were all saying, I got to get this. Because once you've got your stuff backed up, it backs up over the internet, and it's always keeping it backed up, always automatically. You can get to your data anywhere. You can log into your Carbonite account. There's even a free iPhone app and a free BlackBerry app. So your data is always available to you. You just log in to Carbonite and you've got remote access to your data. So that's a nice feature. Unlimited backup for all the personal files on your internal hard drive for just $55 a year. It's a no-brainer. Now you should have a local backup. I'm not saying don't have a local backup, but you really need one that you can access anywhere, anytime, even if the worst happens, and that's Carbonite. Try it free for 2 weeks right now. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name Leo as the offer code. And if you want to buy it, you'll get 2 months free when you use my name Leo. Carbonite. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, is here. We're going to do a full day show in a couple of weeks, right?
Sixth, Saturday. Normally I'm on Sundays, but right. I'm going to be up in the Bay Area and going to the Audio Engineering Society convention in San Francisco. And I thought, you know what? I can't come to the Bay Area and not come visit my friend
That's
Leo.
That's right.
So I'm going to come up to the studio and be there all 3 hours if you'll have me.
We will. All 3 hours. November 6th. That's a Saturday. So if your station doesn't carry the show on Saturdays, you'll have to get the podcast after the fact or listen to the internet broadcast of one of the stations that does carry both days. That's November 6th, all day. Get your home theater questions ready for Scott Wilkinson.
Absolutely.
Now, subwoofers. Is two better than one?
Yes. Aupu Mosin asks, many new AV receivers, and again, this is regarding AV receivers, have 7.2, 9.2, or even 11.2 channels, as opposed to 5.1 or 7.1.
Yeah, I've heard of 0.1. The 0.1 is one subwoofer.
Correct.
So now they're doing two.
Correct.
0.2.
And the answer is, does that mean you can connect two subwoofers? And the answer is yes, absolutely. That's the point. Now, very often, all this is an internal Y splitter. Okay, so you could do this with a 7.1 receiver. You've heard
split
of
it externally, yeah.
Exactly. You just connect the output to a Y splitter and send it to two subs. No problem.
As long as you have enough juice to do it, because don't subwoofers take a lot of wattage?
No, they don't, because they are self powered generally.
Ah, so you just need a signal going out to them. You don't really need any big amplification.
Correct. They have their own amplifiers because you're right. They do need a lot of juice. And because of that, subwoofer manufacturers have said, well, we don't know how much juice our customers have, so we're going to put it in the subwoofer so that we know it's got enough oomph to do the job.
So if you have a powered subwoofer, have at it. Now, but there could be some problems. We're running out of time. That's one problem right now.
Dang.
Hang on, and I want to tell you what the problems can be.
Sure.
With having more than one subwoofer in just a bit. Scott Wilkinson's here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll get back to the phones in just a second with your questions and calls. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Scott Wilkinson is here, our home theater expert from the Ultimate AV Magazine. We were, during the commercial, debating with the chat room the pronunciation of BALUN, which is that device you attach to an HDMI. Actually, it can be used for a lot of things. It's a balanced, unbalanced converter.
Right. Normally used to convert Cat 5. Into HDMI or component video.
Right.
I mean, in what we're talking about.
And some say in the chat room it's Balin because it's balanced, unbalanced. But then Daddy-O in our chat room says he worked at the Zenith plant and the Zenith engineers called him Balins.
That's what I've always called it.
It's like that debate over whether you pronounce the graphics file format GIF as GIF or GIF. There's a right answer, I guess, because the guy who invented it says it's GIF. But you and I agree. It sounds like peanut butter if you say GIF, so we're going to call it GIFs.
And the guy who invented it, be damned.
Yeah. Just because you invented it doesn't mean you get to pronounce it right.
Yeah, really? Anyway, you were saying something about two subs.
Two subs. Now, one problem with two subs I would worry about is phase, because they're in different parts of the room. If they get out of phase, you're going to get a weird canceling and or amplification effect, aren't you?
That's exactly correct. But you're going to get that with one sub as well, because the sound comes out of the subwoofer and it reflects around the room. And the room, assuming particularly if it's like a rectangular, normal kind of room, is going to, at certain frequencies, it's going to reinforce them and it's going to create what are called standing waves.
Well, you get that. Sometimes people put a sub in the corner.
Yes.
Just so it sounds boom, boom, boom. Sounds
yeah, you
bassier.
Put a sub in a corner, you get a lot more bass. It reinforces the bass.
Reinforces it.
Now, and so this really points out the importance of placement with subwoofers, one or two or four for that matter. And a lot of people have done a lot of research on this. And one of the places to start, if you have two subwoofers, which is what we're talking about here, is to, if you have a rectangular, relatively closed room, you want to put them on the side walls at the midpoint of the sidewalls. And if you do that and you sit near the center of the room, you are going to minimize the peaks and nulls, as they're called, the standing waves problems in that room with those two subs. And in fact, having two subs will solve that problem if they're judiciously placed better than one sub can.
So that might be the argument for two subs.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Precisely right.
Okay. So, yeah, I have audio engine speakers. I got my son. He wanted a stereo system with a big bass because he listens to this kind of music called dubstep that's all about...
Yeah, right. You hear that going in the cars.
You're in the cars. And so I got him the audio engine speakers, which are very nice powered speakers, but they offer a additional powered sub, and it has on it a phase knob.
Yeah, most subs do.
So you can say, oh, yeah, it's a little out of phase. I could tell, and you could turn it. And maybe that'll help. But you're doing by ear, right?
You're doing that by ear. You really have to, unless you have sophisticated measuring equipment, which most people don't. Right. Then you're turning it by ear. If you think you have something weird, you can try adjusting that control. Some subs only offer zero or 180 degree phase switches.
Oh, okay.
Not continuous controllers. Okay. Some of them offer continuous controllers. So whatever you have, give it a try. See what works. But placement is more important than the setting of that switch or that knob.
All I know is I have to tell him you can't listen to your music when anyone's home because we live in a two-story house, but the whole place vibrates.
Yes, yes. Well, that sub must be pretty good.
Well, I figure we don't have a rodent problem now. any pests? This is better than an exterminator.
They're gone.
They go, I'm getting out of here. I got a headache. This is terrible. Why is it so loud in here? I'm moving next door. All right. So thank you, Scott Wilkinson. UltimateAVMagazine.com is the website. If you have,
by the way, at UltimateAVMag.com, we're running a new sweepstakes I want to make sure everybody knows about.
Okay.
The prize is a Logitech Harmony One universal remote. My favorite universal remote of all time. The one I, in fact, use in my own home.
I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
So log on, post a comment, and good luck at winning that prize.
UltimateAVMag.com. Now, let me ask before you go.
Yes.
Have you ordered the Logitech review?
I'm waiting
Google
for
TV?
It.
Yeah. I'm waiting. Mine got shipped. So maybe next week we can do a little mini review if you have time.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. I look forward to it.
I'll plug it in and I'm running out of HDMI ports. I got a Roku box, a cable box, that Oppo Blu-ray player, which I love.
It's great.
I've got an the new Apple TV. And I think one more thing plugged into the HD. I have five HDMI devices. I'm going to have to unplug something. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Or get an HDMI switcher.
Yep. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson. We'll talk
again
next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. Let's get back to the phones. And from Vancouver, Washington, Bart is on the line, our next caller. Hey, Bart, Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
Thanks for hanging on. I'm great.
Great. Hey, I was wondering, will the new Verizon iPad with Wi-Fi work just as good as the AT&T with 3G on mapping, you know, like driving down the road?
Ah, that's a great question. No, it will not. So here's what Verizon's selling. It's very confusing. They are selling the Wi-Fi edition of the Apple iPad, not the 3G edition. And then selling you a locked down MiFi card, which is one of their little credit card sized devices. I love them that receive data from the 3G network. So, you know, you've got 3G that way. It turns it into Wi-Fi. And since the iPad is Wi-Fi, the card matches up. It is locked down, I believe, to the iPad. So you can't use it with any other device. It costs the same as a Apple 3G iPad. But you're getting service from Verizon. So the theory being, if you had bad AT&T service where you live, this might be a better solution. But you pinpointed something very important. The 3G iPads don't just have a 3G receiver in it. They have a GPS receiver in it. The Wi-Fi iPads do not. So what that means is the GPS on a Verizon iPad is going to be reliant on location using Wi-Fi. Location triangulation, which isn't very good. I mean, it's okay, but it's not GPS. So you're absolutely right. This is not a good choice if you want to do location. It's a very bad choice, in fact, Bart. I'd stick with the Apple iPad. As long as you've got AT&T service in your area, it's a better choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Finally, anyone can make his or her own professional-looking, slick website easy and simple with Squarespace. I use it. My friends use it. I want you to try it. Go to Squarespace.com and use the code TECHGUY for 10% off for the life of your site. That's Squarespace.com. Enter the code TECHGUY. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo is my number. The website is TechGuyLabs.com. That's where you can go if you want to get more information about anything we talk about. James DeRuvo, who does such a great job of taking notes, is writing things down as we speak. This is episode 712. TechGuyLabs.com. You also find a link there to our great chat room. A lot of fun in there. Let me just see how many people are in there. I call them my externalized brain because with 700 people in there, that's how many are in there right now. There's pretty much no question that they can't answer. And then what I do is I just say, according to the chat room, my brain says the answer is no. So they're very, if you want to be part of that hive mind, go to techguylabs.com, click the chat link. There's also video you can watch of me doing the show. What a brilliant idea. A video broadcast of a guy sitting and talking. Ooh, that's good. All at techguylabs.com. Nick in Pittsburgh, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good. I got a nice cup of coffee. The Giants won in the pennant, and all's right with the world.
Good to hear.
Yeah, are you from Pittsburgh, California, or PA? Because that will very much affect your opinion about this.
PA.
I'm so sorry. I am wearing Phillies red, however, today in honor of a great team. And what a great series it was. Really fun to watch. What can I do for you, Nick?
I had a question about, it's kind of a two-part question about recording. And I figured if there's anybody to talk to about recording and audio, it would be you.
I do a lot of recording. Yes, I do.
But what I'm working on is transferring cassette tapes into a digital format.
Right.
Wondering what would be the best file format to save them in, because, the tape quality is not that good to begin with. Does it make sense to go with, like, a lossless format or not?
You know, here's the argument pro and con. A lossless format is larger, of course. The less you compress, the better the quality. But, you can overdo it for something that's a low-quality source. So, when people really care about the audio quality, they'll use a compression called FLAC, F-L-A-C, which is lossless. That means when you uncompress it, you get exactly what the original was. You know, you get as good as it can be. The problem with MP3 and its successor AAC is it's called loss-E compression. That means little chunks of the audio are removed forever. Now, in theory, if it's done properly, those are chunks you couldn't hear anyway. The theory behind MP3 is actually fascinating. I interviewed the guy, Heinz Brandenburg. What was his name? Johann Heinz Brandenburg, something like that, who invented MP3 at the Fraunhofer Corporation in Germany. And the insight that allowed them to do lossy compression was the human ear, the way human ear works, turns out when the human ear is hearing a particular, any given frequency, there are related harmonic frequencies that the ear doesn't hear. So if you're hearing one frequency, the theory goes, well, the compression can remove all the harmonics on the other frequencies because you're not hearing them anyway. So that insight allowed them to compress music 10 to 11 times more than uncompressed music. That's huge compared to the 2-to-1 you get from a lossless. So if you take a song and you compress it with FLAC or Apple lossless or any other lossless technology, even ZIP, you'll get about half the size file. You compress it with MP3, even a high-quality MP3, you're going to get 1/10 the size. That's a big difference. But it turns out MP3 and AAC, in fact, don't give you exactly the same thing as a lossless does. Even though they're only removing harmonic frequencies that, in theory, you can't hear, somehow it does change the sound. Now, in my opinion, the best way to go, especially with cassette, you know, sometimes people say, well, if you're putting a lousy sound source into compression, the compression is going to make it even worse. You know, it's funny. This is kind of counterintuitive, but some people say, oh, if it's really, really good source, that's okay to compress it with a lossy compression technology. But when it's garbage in, the lossy is going to sound worse, garbage out. I don't think so. I think if you use a high bitrate MP3, you're going to get the best results. So here's what you should do, Nick. You should record it as a wave. And you should clean it up as best you can. One of the things you'll find with cassettes is if they're recorded with Dolby, they will be bumped at the high and low end. You know, the way, actually just at the high end, the way Dolby works is it raises the level. It's trying to get the hiss out. So it raises the level of the high end and then brings it back down. In theory, the hiss is removed. So you'll either hear hiss or you'll hear some strange results. You want to remove the Dolby or you might want to cut the hiss with a high pass filter. You might want to process it, in other words, a little bit to make it sound better. And then I would suggest saving it out. And you could do this with the free program called Audacity. I would then save it out as a high bitrate MP3. So normally on an MP3, you record at 128,000 bits per second, 128 kilobits. If you go to 160 kilobits, or even better, 192 kilobits, I don't think even a golden ear is going to be able to tell the difference. So I would say, given, unless you have unlimited disk space, and you always will, and in some cases that's true, 192 kilobit MP3 is probably as good as you need to go for that cassette. Okay?
All right, thanks.
Long, long answer.
Yeah.
This is why we only get through a few calls an hour. But I think this is an opportunity to talk about something fascinating, which is how this lossy compression works. You know, we use lossy compression in pictures as well and video as well. All video is compressed. It's too big otherwise. You couldn't pass it through the computer if it were uncompressed. Pictures don't have to be compressed. So if you have a bitmap or a TIFF, that's generally compressed, if it's compressed at all, with a lossless compression. It can be reconstituted to exactly the original. But JPEG, which is much more commonly used, and you might have noticed that there's a big difference in size when you use Photoshop between saving as a JPEG and saving as a TIFF. JPEG is much like MP3. It's a lossy compression technology. It removes information. Information that, in theory, the eye won't be able to see. But in practice, you know, you can tell. It's just a little different. Same thing with MP3. You can tell. Once I got to pull this aside, when I worked in San Francisco, I was walking by Dolby Labs once. You know, Dolby Labs is the sound, the people who do the Dolby sound. I mean, these guys are brilliant sound people. And an engineer said, "Psst, hey, Leo, come here." I'm not kidding. It was a very strange experience. "Psst, hey, Leo, come here." And he dragged me into their special listening chamber. This was an engineered anechoic chamber with very high quality stereo equipment. Rebel speakers, you know, $10,000 speakers, the best equipment. He said, "Listen to this." And now this is at a time when Dolby had its own compression that wasn't MP3, but he, you know, he was engineers. Engineers like to tell the truth. They're not marketers. So he said, "Listen to this." And he played a Steely Dan song. He said, "And I'm going to do an A-B comparison. This is MP3, 128 kilobits. This is the original." It was from a CD. I could kind of tell the difference. I could pick pretty reliably every time, "Oh, that's the MP3. He then went to 160 kilobits, just a slightly larger file size, slightly less compression, and I could not tell the difference. 160 kilobit MP3. Now, I'm an old man and my ears aren't as good as I was when I was young, but that I believe 160 or 192 kilobits, most of us are not going to be able to tell the difference with MP3. So that's kind of the sweet spot. My friend Patrick Norton, who does use MP3 because it saves so much file size, he will record at the highest bit rate possible, which is 320 kilobits. There's still compression going on, but not as much. There's always a trade-off, file size versus compression and quality. Steve, New York, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, how you doing?
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I was out looking at replacing the TV today.
Well, great. How fun.
LCDs.
You waited long enough now that there's I think the big screen TV markets have stabilized, and you're getting great pictures now on almost any TV you're looking at.
Yeah. Now, they also had, now I was looking at a 32-inch TV.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. What's the difference? Is there a difference between an LCD and an LED?
Yeah, they're both LCDs. It's the backlight that you're talking about. A normal LCD is backlit by fluorescent bulbs. A LED backlit LCD, which they abbreviate just to LED, uses LEDs, edge-lit LEDs to light it. And usually that means a better picture. I prefer the LED backlit. If you have the choice and it's not massively more expensive, of course, if you look at it and you can't tell the difference, and in a smaller screen like this, you might not be able to. Then it doesn't matter. But I would look at the LEDs closely, and here's what you want to look at. You want to look at how black the blacks are and how white the whites are. The best screens give you a black, 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 not a gray, but a black, black, and a white that's perfect and white. So look carefully and see if you could tell the difference. Sometimes they call it contrast ratio, but really it's not. I guess it is, but it's look at it carefully. And in my opinion, LED backlit, even the edge lit, which is what everybody's doing now, is better. That's the one you should get. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls right after this. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. You should sign up. You really should. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. You can thank me later. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's my number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, a correction, an insult to hurl. 8888 Ask Leo. You can also visit our website, techguylabs.com, for links to everything we talk about. My Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLeoLaporte. I guess somebody had taken Leo Laporte. The Leo Laporte. And my Twitter handle is Leo Laporte. Twitter.com/LeoLaporte. And I always read my Twitter @s, so you could ask a question there as well. Antone in Southern California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Antone.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm wonderful. Welcome.
Hey, thanks. I normally don't have to call in. Not that that's a bad thing, but I'm a fairly techy, geeky kind of guy. I'm running.
You're the kind of, I have people who listen. I bet you're one of these who listen to see if I get it wrong.
No.
I know there's people listening just waiting. And that's fine. I think that's great.
I have better things to do with my life.
Good for you.
I will say I've used Non-32 ever since you advertised it, though, and I'm really happy with that on our Windows machine.
Excellent. Glad to hear that.
The problem I'm having is that on Linux, of course, Apple doesn't acknowledge the existence of Linux, so I can't iTunes on Linux. So what I did is I've downloaded Firefly, and that's a... It mimics the Apple iTunes shared library protocol, I guess. It's called DAAP.
And you might GDAP, yep. I use Firefly as well on a network-attached storage device.
Right, and it's great. I have all of our music. I've burned all of our CDs to the server, but because I've made my wife's music, my music, and my daughter's music, the folks here in the house, my wife and my daughter specifically, they don't want to import all 25 bytes of music into their local itinerary. And
they shouldn't have to. They should be able to just play it from the DAP server.
That's right. They can play it from the DAP server. So my problem is if you find a song you want and you want to put it on your iPod, I can't find any allows you to do that other than looking at the...
Right. A DAP server is not the same as a shared library. A DAP server is an iTunes music server clone, which means it's serving it just in the same way as when you listen to somebody's music off of their computer on the network, but you don't have access to the physical, file to sync it. So in that case, what you need to do is mount the network attached server drive and point iTunes to it as its library.
Oh, okay. See, that's not what I wanted. My wife would then have to sort through this is, for me.
She would then see your daughter's music. I know. I see my son's hip hop music. I don't want to see it.
Right.
But I do.
No boy. It's I'm at this two stage like every half if kid. Look through, and then
unfortunately, your Skype is falling apart here, Anton. So I'm going to put you on hold here. That's the choice. When you're using iTunes, you have two choices. You can play music, and then now Apple, by the way, is moved to this home sharing system, which I suspect is the beginning of the end for these open source iTunes music server clones like Firefly. I don't know. We'll see. But so they're using home sharing now. Maybe it's an open standard. Maybe you can just continue to use DAP clones. But the idea is you share somebody's library, which means you can listen to their songs as long as they're on your local network, your local area network. But it doesn't mean you can get their songs. Apple's paranoid about piracy, right? If you want to sync to that music, you have to have the library you're syncing to be your library. Now, you can do that even if you have a central storage, a network-attached storage, by saying, that's my library out there on drive G or whatever it is. That's my library, and pointing to it. But then you're going to see everything that's in the library. You could import those songs, but then you'll have a copy of those songs on the hard drive. So you can't have it both ways, I guess. You either have a local or a pseudo local copy of the song, and then you can sync it, or you have a shared copy of the song, and you cannot. Those are your two choices. There's never the twain shall meet. Unfortunately, this is how Apple has done it, it makes sense. Don Van Nuys, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Don.
Hi, how you doing? Hey, I've got a pop-up window that just started yesterday, and it's called Security Tool. And I'm about ready to pull my hair out trying to get rid of this thing.
Ooh. I don't know Security Tool, and it worries me that it's such a generic name.
Yeah, well, it doesn't allow you to do anything.
Yeah, sounds like it's not a tool. It's a security virus.
Yeah, well, I got Nod 32 on, and it didn't catch it. And that kind of worries me.
Yeah, that worries me, too. It is a rogue or fake antivirus.
Right.
Whenever you see something with a name that generic, that should really tell you. And this is very much like Antivirus 2009. The goal of this is to get you to install their stuff. There's a couple of things that could happen here. In some cases, I think in this case, it's really a protection racket.
Right.
It won't let you do anything until you pay them some money and unlock it.
Right.
So you're kind of, unfortunately, you're kind of in a bad situation here. You got a bug, and you got to disinfect. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866, the number 2-NET to get DSL Extreme. Oh, it's been fun watching the chat room during the break. There are about 800 different ideas about removing security tools. So, security tool is a particularly evil kind of malware. Yes, it's malware. It's a those are bad guys who wrote that program. What it does when you get it on your system is it blocks everything. Everything stops working except your browser. And they say in the announcement, oh, you have a virus. But if you buy a removal tool, we can fix it. And then you spend the $30, you get the removal tool, and guess what it does? It removes itself. Actually, probably doesn't remove itself. It just removes the blocks, sits around for another 3 months, and then it activates itself again. It doesn't remove anything. Hundreds of thousands of dollars a month pouring into offshore accounts for stuff like this. This junk. If you get it, it's like any other malware. You got a problem. There are ways to remove it. I'll put a couple of links in the show notes at techguylabs.com. To various sites that say, here's how you remove it. Most of the time it involves somehow stopping the security tool process, because as long as it's running, you can't do anything else. Stopping the security tool process, you can do that with a task kill command in the command line. And then running a spyware or malware removal tool. Sometimes a couple of them. And crossing your fingers, because the problem is that all of these articles are out of date. Check the date it was written. Even if it's a few weeks old, it's out of date because the people who write security tool change it all the time. Well, they look at these articles and they say, okay, they're using malware bytes. Let's fix that. So the recommendation, is something. One of the recommendations I'm looking at says use super anti-spyware to clean it up. And then use malware bytes to clean it up. These are freebie programs that kind of benevolent programmers have put out to try to remove this stuff. It's hard for them to keep up to date. It changes so fast. Microsoft's malicious software removal tool might be able to help. Then a system restore. And then cross your fingers, because frankly, these bad guys know you're going to try all this stuff. So what do? Well, just in case, they hide a little something extra, a little extra payload buried deep within a rootkit somewhere on your hard drive that nobody can see, that nobody removes. And then, they wait a little bit and then they sneak back onto your system. Any security expert will tell you there's just no way of being sure you've removed a virus without formatting the drive and reinstalling Windows from a known good source, period. Anything else, you're taking a chance. Now, I understand for a lot of you, that's just a lot of extra work, because once you reinstall Windows, then you have to run all the Windows updates to get it back up to date, and then you have to reinstall all your applications, and then you have to restore all your data, which you, I hope, backed up before you formatted the hard drive, and then, you're done 4 hours later, or maybe 4 days later, depending on how much stuff you have to do. It's a lot of work. It's the only way to be sure. So, the real bottom line is don't get these things in the first place. Don't accept files from strangers. Don't open attachments to your email. Make sure you keep Windows Update absolutely updated. And as a matter of fact, update everything else, especially Adobe stuff, Flash and Reader. Make sure that's up to date. Check periodically all of your programs. Make sure they're up to date, because they can all be exploited by bad guys. Make sure you've got a hardware router on your system. That works as a very effective firewall, but also turn on the Windows firewall, because you can't have too much protection. And then, as kind of belt and suspenders, a good antivirus. If you don't want to buy one, Windows Security Essentials is a freebie from Microsoft. It's fine. Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. I prefer Nod 32. It's a hardcore antivirus. But as this caller told you, it's not detecting it. You know why? Because once he got the virus on his system, it disables Nod 32. This is the real problem. Once somebody is on your system, all bets are off. because of the way Windows is constructed, any program running can see every other program running, can modify any file, can change everything. Once they're on your system, all bets are off. That's why security experts say you got to format the drive, because you can't be sure what is done. And, you know, you can run an antivirus, but the antivirus may be tampered with. It is in this case, because I can assure you Nod32C's security tool. And then, you know, I mean, so I will always have this fight with the people in the chat room and other experts who will say, oh, no, I could disinfect any computer. Well, you think you can. And maybe you can, but how do you know? How can you be sure? That's sad. I hate it when people call in with these problems, not because I don't want to talk about it. I do. We need to every week. But I just feel so bad because it's over. the deed is done. Now, there's one other thing you should consider, and then we're going to get back to the phones. Sandy's in Highland, California. She has a TV, but she doesn't have a cable. Chris is in Boulder, Colorado. He wants to use his T-Mobile when he can't get internet otherwise. I'll talk about all that in just a bit, but right now would be a very good time to talk about backup, because there's one other thing you should always do as part of your security strategy, and that's have a good backup. Because remember, the first thing you do before you format the drive is make sure you got all your data. Well, if you have Carbonite, you don't have to worry about having a good backup. You do. Carbonite for consumers and now for businesses, Carbonite Pro, because the truth is, it's even more important that businesses have a good backup, isn't it? Think about it. What would happen to your small business? I have this nightmare myself. If all the data on your computers in the office were gone, if those computers were gone, somebody breaks in and steals everything, including your backups, what do you do? What will you do? What do you have, paper ledgers? Not anymore. How do you reconstruct your business? If you have a business, you got to have good backups. And I would submit you have to have good backups that are off-site, so that if the whole office burns down or somebody breaks in and steals everything, you at least have a backup in the cloud. And that's where Carbonite Pro is so great. You could try it free for 30 days. Just go to CarbonitePro.com. You'll see immediately how it works. Centralized dashboard. You don't pay for the number of users. You pay for the amount of storage. So it starts at $10 a month. You can have, if you've got 10 users, each with 2 gigabytes, for a total of 20 gigabytes of storage, I think that's $20 a month. A month, that's it. It runs on every computer. So your users can log in to Carbonite Pro, their Carbonite Pro account, and get their data back without bugging you. I really like that, both as a user and as an IT person. That's a nice feature. 20 gigabytes is $10 a month. It's less than I said. So 10 users, 2 gigabytes per computer, that's $10 a month. Now, come on. What are you waiting for? Go to CarbonitePro.com. Automatic offsite backup using hardcore encryption, triple DES and Blowfish, so your stuff is private, secure, safe, SSL during the transmission. I mean, it's got all the features you want. CarbonitePro.com. Try it today. It's a must for your small business. Believe me, as a small business owner, I love the fact that I can sleep right at night with Carbonite. Sandy is in Highland, California, our next caller. Hi, Sandy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, thank you so much. I've been trying to reach you for months.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. It took so long.
Yes. So please be patient with me. I'm going to try and speak fast. But
No, Sandy, take your time. There's no hurry.
You don't know how much that means.
Take a deep breath. It's just you and me, and any whatever you need, I'm here for you.
Thank you. I need you. Okay. I'm an old lady, a widow. I have worked and took care of everybody in my family until they all died. Now I'm totally alone.
Oh, Sandy, I'm sorry.
And pretty much homebound. And so I'm just now getting in. I've decided I'm going to get back to school.
Good.
Everything's computer.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But don't, Sandy, I know you're going to get to your question in a second, but don't be intimidated, because, look, a 6-year-old kid can figure this out. You can figure this out.
Yeah, the kids can figure it out.
So you can. Don't be afraid. It won't be hard. It might be a little different and challenging, but think how good that is for your brain. That makes your brain grow. It's good. It's like exercise.
Well, maybe there were like four things I wanted to ask you, but since you are starting with the school, then I'll try that first.
Okay.
Probably simple things to you, but I still have record albums and 8-track tapes and cassettes. You know, I'm just getting into this computer thing. I've got a laptop at a warehouse place, and I got a printer of the same brand at the same time.
Okay.
And I'm figuring out the laptop pretty much.
Good.
Keys, but I'm working it.
Good.
You said earlier, if you wanted to hurl an insult at us, the particular printer I got, I don't know if you can say a brand.
Say names. Oh, yeah. We love to name names.
I had someone with me who bought the same brand, but a different model, and hers were wonderful. I didn't get that because I didn't need faxing. I got the HP C4750 printer. It's supposed to copy, scan, and print, and up to 200 pages. Well, it barely does 80 pages, and the ink is triple the cost.
I know. Isn't that, you know, so the printer was cheap, but they got you because it's like giving away the razor and then charging you $10 for each blade. They got you.
Had with my old desktop took 56 and 57 cartridges. They lasted forever. This is 60, HP 60, and they just.
There's nothing I can do for that one. This is, I think, criminal. If you added up the cost of the ink, we're talking thousands of dollars a gallon. It doesn't cost them that much.
The printer that the person that was with me got is on sale now, and I'm going to go get that particular printer.
Sandy, hang on. We got to take a break, but I'm not going to hang up on you. I'm just going to put you on hold. We'll come back because I want to help you here. So hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I'm ready to go off on inkjet cartridge costs. We have Sandy here, who, as any normal person would, went out, bought a computer, said, well, I need a printer too, bought an HP printer, and it's costing her huge amounts of money to print things. And you know what, Sandy? It's not just you. It's everybody. It's a scandal. I'm looking on the web, and inkjet ink sometimes costs as much as $8,000 a gallon. And it's outrageous. And let me tell you, this is a big business. In 2003, when people started complaining about this, it was already a $21 billion a year business. Ink for inkjet cartridges. Half of HP's operating profits come from their printers, and most of that comes from the inkjets, the ink cartridges. In fact, HP sued and won for patent infringement against a company that made cheap inkjet cartridge replacement. Epson was sued because the class action lawsuit said that Epson's cartridges had a chip in them that signaled they needed replacement even when they were still inking them. So, I mean, they're not greedy enough. Now they're even lying. They're saying, oh, I need a new cartridge, even then, though there's plenty of ink left.
Yes.
I mean, it is scandalous, Sandy. And I wish there were a good answer. You know, there are inkjet refills. You can go to Office Max sometimes and bring in your cartridge. I wouldn't do it yourself. It's messy.
No, I'm just going to go get the other printer.
Get a more economical one. Yeah. But you know, none of them are really, truly economical.
Yeah. But this one, when I did a little research about the printers, comparing hers to mine, there was nothing but complaints, the same complaints I had.
Yeah. So yours is particularly bad.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times you go to an office, a warehouse store to buy hardware. you're going to get kind of the lowest common denominator hardware, and usually they buy, you know, the cheapest stuff. So it's okay, but that's the risk. There is a better way if you need to print a lot. And then most offices use laser printers because the cost per page is much lower. That's what we use here in my office. But for an individual who wants color prints occasionally, inkjet really is the most economical way to go. Just print less, I guess, is the answer.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to hurl that.
Yeah, I want to give you support because you're not alone. This is a problem everybody has.
Because this particular, the 4750 is really bad. But I don't want to take up all your time here. I'm alone now, and so I'm kind of getting my life together, and I'm going back to school. And, you know, this is going to sound really silly, but I'm a very auditory learner, and I was preparing to take my little cassette tape recorder, but there was another student in the class that had some tiny little thing in his hand, and he sat about three rows back in the middle, and he was able to record the lectures without all the noise of the papers and everything.
Right. They have more directional mics. It probably was an Olympus.
And I want to know
Did you ask him what brand it was?
Pardon?
I
want to know what it is, so I know what to ask.
Well, there are a number of... Just say what kind of recorder you're using. The Olympus, Olympus has a lot of very small recorders. What you want is a directional recorder. There's a company called, if he's a geek, he may have had a Zoom, Z-O-O-M. These have very specialized directional microphones in them, but they're kind of pricey. I would bet that he has a fairly inexpensive Olympus voice recorder. And by the way, the same warehouse store that sold you the inkjet probably carries those as well. But you're looking for directional microphones, not omnidirectional. Omnidirectional is going to pick up the whole room. You want a microphone that aims itself right at the professor. So you get that sound exactly.
Okay. So I'm asking for a voice recorder, voice recorder.
Directional. Exactly. Directional voice recorder.
Directional.
And Olympus makes some very nice, very small. It was pretty small, this one that he had.
Yes, because, and then he plugged it into my computer and downloaded all the stuff because there's like slides.
Isn't that great? Well, how nice of him.
Yeah.
I bet you he has an Olympus. Just ask him. It's going to be a voice recorder. And Olympus makes directional ones.
Okay.
And since you know that his works well, if you wanted to buy one, I would just say, well, what are you using? That's, by the way, even in this day of the internet, that's how we geeks find out what's good. We ask our friends. We watch. We watch Twitter. We listen to the show. And that's kind of the neat thing is this information does spread.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I had to have some surgery, so I had to drop, and I'm going back in January.
Good.
I'll be prepared for time. I had taken my laptop to school every day, but I have wireless, and I thought I could just do it, but somehow it wouldn't work because it had to be connected to the school's computer system or something, but I'm not going to worry about that. If I can get the Olympus directional voice recorder, that's what I'm asking for.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now,
By the way, that's Aaron B's telling me in the chat room. That's the original social networking, isn't it? Ask the guy sitting next to you. What are you using? That was it. That sounds really good. Who needs Twitter? Just ask a friend.
it was wonderful, and that's what I need. Now, as I said, I'm alone. I have a lot of things that I want to. Update to put on DVD or CD of music and VCR tapes. I, at a different store that I usually never went into, I always had bad luck, but this lady said, oh, it's really easy. She sold me this machine that would record VCR tapes to DVDs. I cannot figure it out.
Yeah. If you had asked me ahead of time, I would have said, you know, this is a more advanced topic for...
She was a stalker.
Yeah. Well, this is a more advanced topic as you get better with computers. This is a tricky thing to do, to convert those 8 tracks of VHS tapes, the vinyl records.
Tape that has my husband and my son and my parents, everybody that's gone now.
Oh, you really want those, don't you? Holy cow. Well, the device she sold you is kind of what I would have recommended. It's an all-in-one device, probably Panasonic, and it has a DVD recorder in it and a VHS player in it. Let's think about, folks, and we're going to take, we have to take a break, Sandy, but let's think about somewhere Sandy can get some help for this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why wait in line at the post office to buy stamps when you could print your own official U.S. postage for anything from your own Windows PC and your own printer? It's Stamps.com. For a no-risk trial offer, including $45 free postage, go to Stamps.com, click the Try It Free button, use my name, Leo. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo's a phone number. Had a great conversation with Sandy. And I don't have any more time, Sandy, because we spent a long time on it. But she raised a really interesting point. Now, she wants to do some interesting things, things a lot of people want to do, like convert these VHS tapes to DVD so she can watch them. And it's a good idea, Sandy, because the VHS is eventually going to flake off and die. Anything, whether it's a Super 8 or high or video or Super 8 film or any of those family memories you've got there, even slides and photo negatives, eventually over time they degrade. And so it's a really good idea to convert them. If you can afford it, a service bureau is probably the best way to go. You can give those tapes, pack them up in a box and give them to a company. There's plenty of companies all over. She's in Highland, California. If you just look in the Yellow Pages or online, there are a lot of companies that will do this. They will convert it for you, and you'll have a DVD, and that's going to be the easiest, best way to do it. But you bought a device, and now she's saying, well, I can't figure out how to use it. What you need is you need a tech guy. So where do you get a tech guy? Well, I encourage you, if there's anybody in high school listening, this would be a great thing to do, is to find seniors in your area who want to learn this stuff, but they just need somebody to show them how to do it. Great for a high school kid or a college kid, maybe make 10 bucks an hour, but you'd learn how to, you'd help somebody learn how to do this stuff. You'd make a little money on the side. I think this is a great, great idea. Forget babysitting. Be a tech support person for a senior in your neighborhood. Doesn't have to be a senior. It's probably, there's lots of people, young people who could use a hand. You'll also find a users group. There are users groups all over. In fact, it's interesting. I speak to users groups from time to time, and there's definitely a graying going on. Users groups, young people, I think, feel like, I know I don't need any help with this, but I think older people do. And so users groups really cater to seniors. Many of them are completely composed of seniors. And there's always somebody who's kind, gentle, helpful, will take his time or her time to help you get this working. So I would check for a user group in your area. Usually they meet once a month at a public place like a library or a community center. Just go. It'll be a great place to meet people. And there's sure to be somebody who's willing to give you a hand. Just raise your hand. Usually they have a Q&A period at the end. Raise your hand saying, I need a hand doing this. Somebody want to help me or know somebody who wants to help me? That'd be great. You did, I think, a smart thing going to local classes. Community colleges have them. Many cities have these extension classes. It's not unusual for libraries to offer this kind of thing. Those are always great places to learn. And see, it turns out everybody wants to learn this stuff. And I know sometimes on this show I kind of get a little high level and maybe we get a little geeky here and I apologize. But since you said you're an auditory learning center, this might be a good place too, because even though, some of what I'm saying is going to be unintelligible, by osmosis it starts to sink in, and you might be surprised at how quickly you pick up the jargon, what we're talking about. And I think this is a good place to learn too. So use the community. There's a big geek community, and geeks, and I know a lot of you listen to this show, geeks help out. There are a lot of people who want to know this stuff, and it's a great idea to help them out. It's good karma, if nothing else. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Now, let me talk a little bit about what Apple announced on Wednesday. We mentioned, you know, the new MacBook Airs. Those are fantastic. Gave us some information about the new iLife package. Always a good deal. $49 upgrade for existing Mac users. If you buy a new Mac, it comes with it. So that's great. That's all nice. All well and good. But Steve announced something that I thought very interesting that could change everything, could change the world of computing. He announced that when the new version of OS X comes out, it will have a feature that the iPhone already has, an app store, a place to buy applications, kind of like iTunes, but not iTunes, where you can buy applications. And all of Apple's applications will be sold there. And we're starting to see, you know, they're going to do a pre-release in 3 months. So Apple's guidelines have already been published for app store, people who want to participate in the app store. I think on the surface, this is a great idea because Apple will, just as they do with the iPhone, they'll vet each application, make sure they work. And I think some of the things Apple's saying, the rules will be, for instance, you can't have a splash screen with a long, lengthy legal agreement, which Apple does itself. Nope, it won't be accepted into the App Store if you've got that. It has to automatically update through the App Store, so people won't have to worry about updating their software anymore. That's good for security. In fact, in general, I think this is a good idea for security, but it does worry me. Apple will take 30% of the proceeds in return for having the store and offering the data and, you know, hosting it and all of that stuff. And I think most developers are happy with the model. It's the same model for the iPhone App Store. They're happy with that model and will be happy to do the same thing, I guess, on desktops. My only fear is that Apple will eventually close the Macintosh in the same way they've closed the iPhone and only allow applications sold in the App Store on the Mac. And that would be very bad. That would be very bad. Microsoft has also made some noise about Windows 8 having an App Store. I think both Microsoft and Apple, quite as businesses, quite reasonably say, this is a great way for us to make money, to control the supply chain, to give our users a very clean experience, to control the kinds of apps. It must drive Steve Jobs crazy. You know, he's very controlled in what apps you can buy on the iPhone. It must drive him crazy that you could put any app you want on a Macintosh, even if it's bad, even if it's Flash. Even, by the way, interesting, these new MacBook Airs, they don't come with Flash. So knowing this about Steve, I worry. Because I think Steve has a little dictatorial streak. He really thinks that he knows what's best for you and me. And I think that you see it in the iPhone, and I really truly think that he would like to do this on Macintoshes as well. And I could tell you right now, that's the last Mac I buy. You know, it's really important to me, and I think for most users, that we can buy applications from anywhere. We can write our own applications. That developers don't have to go through Apple or Microsoft to sell applications to us. That's very important. That's open to me. And I just see a little streak within Apple that they would like to control this more tightly. And I wonder if this is the beginning of the end. We'll have to see. I think the thing to do is to say, hey, yeah, Steve, App Store, nice idea, great idea. As long as you allow us to, you know, put our own software on there, no problem. But I don't want to have to jailbreak my Mac. If I do, that's it. I'll never buy another Mac. I think we need to make that clear, don't we? It's very interesting because some people are saying, oh, that'll never happen. Yeah. Yeah. You don't know Steve like I know Steve. Chris, Boulder, Colorado. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well, Chris. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm of two geeks, and one of them has pushed me into technology, scratching and clawing, but now I kind of like it.
Good.
My question for you is, I'm married to T-Mobile and will be forever. I really like them. I've got my touch slide, and I'm a snowbird. I go to this place in Arizona that is a black hole from T-Mobile. My son told me that it's possible that I can pick up my T-Mobile calls through my computer. Have you ever heard of
this? No, I haven't. I think what he's probably talking about is something like Google Voice.
Oh.
So with Google Voice, what you do, instead of giving out your T-Mobile, now I do this, by the way, but instead of giving out your T-Mobile number, you get a free Google Voice number. It's a, you know, you can get it in the area code you want. It's not a toll-free number, but you get in the area code you want. And then from now on, instead of telling people your cell phone number, you tell them that number.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And then you control that because you can say to Google Voice, well, if that anybody calls that number, have them call my cell or have them call my phone, my home phone or both, okay. Or have them call my home phone in Arizona or have them call my computer using Google Chat.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And I do this and it's awesome. So as long as you've got your Gmail window open and you've got Google Chat on that,
mm-hmm.
when somebody calls my cell phone number, well, they think it's my cell phone number. It rings my cell phone, rings both my. I have two cell phones, an iPhone and an Android phone. It rings both of those, but also rings my computer. And
love
I can
it.
Answer on my computer. I know. I love it, too. And, oh, it gets better. It's, by the way, this is all free. It gets better because you can have contacts in there and you can have different responses for different contacts. So you can say, well, if my son calls, I want to put him through right away.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's that bill collector, send him to voicemail directly.
Okay.
So you can give him different messages for different groups. You can handle it differently. You can have some groups ring one phone, others ring another phone. It is very nice.
Okay.
And that'll work with anything, included T-Mobile.
And I've
got a
phone through my other son, which we're talking on right now. And I always take that phone down with me. You know, I take...
Well, that's handy because now you have one number and wherever you are, it works.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
But it's my.
So this would be very similar to that.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Google Voice, and if you have an Android phone, the integration into the phone is perfect. It's your voicemail system now. Voice.google.com. It's free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. What were we talking about? I forgot what we were talking about. Is there something more I wanted to say about the last song? This is ZZ Top. Just drove it right out of my head. It happens. Oh, we were talking about T-Mobile. That's right. So our last caller... lives in the Southern California area, but goes to Arizona in the winter. And the problem is her T-Mobile phone, which works fine where she lives, doesn't work well in Arizona. She says it's a dead zone where she lives. Her son said, and actually something quite true, and I completely forgot about this, T-Mobile does offer on some phones the ability to make calls via Wi-Fi. So even if you don't have a cell signal, the phone will use your Wi-Fi and make calls. I had that feature on one of my Blackberries, a Blackberry Curve with T-Mobile, and I was very unhappy with the results. Maybe it's gotten better. But in fact, what happened, as soon as I'd get home, the Curve would decide to use the Wi-Fi, and it stopped using the T-Mobile network, even though I had plenty of bars. It would stop using the T-Mobile network, and I always knew because my phone calls sounded terrible all of a sudden, and we'd drop out, and then we're awful. So it's kind of like this femtocell thing that AT&T does. They call it a microcell. The technical term for it is a femtocell. The idea is you buy from AT&T a little device that you put in your house that uses your broadband to create a cell site. And then your AT&T phone, even if you have a dead zone in your house, continues to work, but you're using your broadband. The drawbacks of both the microcell and the T-Mobile system is it uses cell minutes, even though it's not using any of the cell system. It's using your own Wi-Fi, your own broadband, but they still charge you cell minutes for it. Something to be aware of. But yes, to correct myself with our last caller, absolutely, you could use that T-Mobile Wi-Fi calls. Try it and see if it works for you. I think Google Voice is better. But at least you have two choices now. Stan in Woodland Hills, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Stan.
Hi, Leo. Good to speak to you again.
Nice to talk to you.
I've had a TV antenna on my roof for almost 50 years, and that's how I get my TV. Now, I get the best reception I've ever had with digital. However, I'm getting some interference on a couple of channels. The power of the signal is good, up about 70-75%, but signal quality starts dropping out when interference occurs. Occasionally it gets so bad it goes to blue screen and says no signal. Now, I'm wondering, I'm getting good reception, I'm watching a program, and all of a sudden a thing will come in, and it may last for a while, and then it goes away again. Is there a possibility that somebody is broadcasting at the same frequency as my TV station?
Did you, when they went digital, did you get a new antenna designed for the digital signal?
No, I didn't. I have a WineGuard antenna that was designed for long range. I'm 35 miles from Mount Wilson. I have a preamp on it.
Wow.
And that's
And it probably was designed also to get UHF, which is the same frequency that these digital channels are on. So you're probably all right.
Yes. So I'm just wondering if this interference is being caused by somebody illegally broadcasting in that band.
Could very well be. Could be a microwave signal. Could be. Do you have military around there?
Not close by. I'm in Woodland Hills.
Okay. Yeah, it could be. I can't tell. I mean, believe it or not, one of the things you could do is call one of the local TV stations. When I worked in local radio, people would from time to time call up and say, I'm having trouble. And chief engineers at these stations, if they have the time, are often very helpful. You could even call the FCC. The FCC has trucks. They don't have enough of these trucks, but they have trucks that drive around and look for this kind of interference. It sounds like somebody is interfering with your signal. I wonder if your neighbors are reporting the same problem. I don't know how else to answer you except to say, yes, it sounds like interference because it comes and goes. And how do you detect it and how do you get rid of it? That you got me on that one. David in Simi Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah. Hi, Leo. So I listened to the show. I barely started listening this year.
Welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm not from Simi Valley originally. I'm from Hollywood, but I'm work in Simi Valley right now. So I have a problem. Just stop me. It's probably something really common when you like recognize it, what it is. I plugged in like a $40 8 gig MP3 player from Kmart. And I always put in music all the time, erase music. And just a little while ago, I plugged it in, and maybe like it was plugged in for like maybe 25 minutes, and then I plugged in my camera to take some photos out, and it was all on the same computer. And then a box comes up saying like message, and it gave me like a runtime, which was like a minute and 5 seconds till the whole computer would shut off.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
In a minute, I'm going to turn myself off.
Yeah, really, though. And it wasn't my computer, so I'm, like, you know, sweating. And I'm like, wow, I'm like, really, though. And it said DCOM something launcher service.
Yes.
Terminated. Yeah.
Yes.
So I wonder if you were.
This is you're right. This is not an uncommon error.
Yeah.
Oh, and I hear the magic sound. Tell you what, keep listening. I'm going to hang up on you for now. Keep listening. When we come back after the break, I'll give you some possible solutions. I see this error fairly commonly, and I can give you some ideas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be right back. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our last caller had a USB MP3 player, plugs it into a friend's computer. Ooh, gets this big error message. DCOM launcher crashed. The machine will shut down in 90 seconds. Well, yeah, I'm watching the chat room, and they said, yeah, Windows does that now. Instead of blue screening, if something really bad happens, Windows says, I'm not happy, I'm ill, I can't recover, I'm going to give you a minute to get your things in order, and then we're going to shut down now. Doesn't mean there's something wrong with your device. In fact, more likely there was something wrong with your friend's machine. When you plug in the device, plug and play launches, right? When you plug in a new device, the Windows says, I see a new device. Let me launch plug and play. Let me see if I can find a driver for that. Either plug and play itself crashed, which is my guess, or it tried to load a driver for your device and that crashed. But it's probably not your device. Unless every time you plug it into somebody's machine, you get this same error. It's much more likely that there was something wrong with his machine. What do you do? Well, Windows is, like most operating systems, a fairly fragile ecosystem. And if something is bad, something has gone wrong, some file is corrupted or damaged, it can make the whole thing unreliable. There is a facility within Windows to repair itself. If you launch the Windows installer disk, put it in and run the installer. This is a little scary to do. And you go through the process as if you're going to install Windows. It's a little scary. You go, yes, yes, I know, I'm going to. And you'll get right up to the point where it says, whoa, hold on, you already have Windows. What would you like me to do? Erase it, start over, or repair it? You hit the repair button. I think it's an R. And it will then go through. It'll run something called System File Checker, SFC. It'll go through all of the files on there, make sure they're up to date, they're not corrupted, they're not damaged, they're working fine. And if it finds a missing or damaged file, it'll replace it from the Windows install disk. And I suspect that this is what your buddy should do, that there is a damaged file, a file that comes with Windows, and that's what's happening, is that file's getting launched, it's not working properly, and the whole thing is just crashing. Now, how can that happen? Well, easily. If you think about it, hard drive errors are fairly common, and all you have to do is have one bit, one millionth, one billionth of a file, one little bit shifted in the wrong spot, and that file is going to crash. It happens all the time. It's an easy thing to have happen. So I suspect that's what's going on. Dan is waiting for me to say the words cosmic rays. I'll say them for you, Dan. Cosmic rays. It doesn't have to be cosmic rays, but in fact, you're being bombarded all the time by particles from the sun. We call them cosmic rays. And so is your hard drive. Now, your hard drive is somewhat shielded, a little more shielded than you are, but nevertheless, atomic particles from the sun and other sources do hit that hard drive, and if they hit it in the right spot, they can flip a bit, and if they flip a bit in the right spot, it's a little bit like, trying to, hit a target from a million miles away. Usually, you're okay, but every once in a while, a bit can be flipped in the wrong place for a variety of reasons, and Windows crashes. We know this happens. It happens all the time. That repair function will help, David. Stacy, Mission Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Thank you for taking my call, Leo. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Stacy.
I have two super quick questions for you. One really common. Basically, I'm looking to buy a desktop for my mother and a friend. They were both speaking about the towers versus, just your standard issue. And I had heard mixed things about the towers, and I wanted to know what your opinion was.
The truth is the guts inside the tower and the mini tower are probably the same. Same motherboard, same drive, same stuff. It's the guts is what you care about. It's the size of the case.
Okay.
So a big case gives you more room to add more stuff if you want. I think a little case is just fine.
Okay. And do you have any recommendations on what is a good, middle of the line or lower end, you know, desktop?
I'm a Dell fan. I think Dell is your best choice. There are stuff. There are things I would stay away from, like Gateway. I'm not real fond of Gateway. Although I have to say their quality's gotten better. E-machines I would stay away from. HP makes some decent machines. If you know, most of the time when you go to the computer store, those are the brands you're going to see, or you'll see the house brand. But I'm a fan of Dell.
Okay. And then one more question that it probably most people won't really relate to. I have a CAT software program on my laptop.
Say again, a CAT software program?
It's for court reporting to translate the stenograph into English.
It's not a kitty cat.
No. No, it's not a kitty cat.
It's computer-aided translation.
There you go.
Well, hey, no, you laugh, but I have an actual kitty cat program on my iPad. It's called Cat Piano. Have I played this for you? Anyway, all the cats in the neighborhood are going crazy now. So you did not mean that, okay?
No, but that's pretty cool.
I don't know if it's cool, but I have it. I use it to annoy my cat. So you have a program that translates your court reporter, translates your shorthand steno notes into plain English.
Correct. And when I'm running that program, I do not have anything else open at the time. And basically what happens is when I'm writing in real time, my computer tends to freeze up.
Just really? Completely.
Yeah.
It can't keep up with you, or it actually freezes and you have to reboot?
Freezes and I have to reboot.
Oh, that's not good.
No, not good at all. So I don't know. I don't know why that is happening.
It's broken. This is the Bill and Ted answer. It's broken. You know, that's the answer. There's something wrong. It could be the program itself is broken. It could be you're running it on Windows, some old version of Windows, I'm guessing.
Vista Business, actually.
Really?
Really.
Wow. So that should be more robust than that. The idea of, most recent versions of Windows is that if just because a program crashes doesn't mean I should crash, but it sounds like you are crashing the whole darn thing. That's hard to do.
It is, and I was wondering if maybe it was a setting of some sort.
No, it's not a setting. The only way Vista will crash like that is, so modern operating systems, and Vista's one of them, protect themselves. They keep all of their key stuff in a part of memory. It's called Ring Zero that can't be, in normal circumstances, written to by a program. So a renegade program cannot affect the operating system. It just can't break it. However, in order, and this is a flaw, I think, in the design of Windows, in order for a device driver to work, it has to write to this protected system memory. So usually when you see a hard crash like that, you're not even getting a blue screen. The thing is just going, I'm frozen. I can't move.
Yeah.
It's like the Tin Woodsman. Oil me. So when that happens, it could just be that the mouse died. For instance, the clock updating, is anything else happening?
Nothing is happening. No, it's almost like it just goes into I would even say hibernate, maybe, like that sort of.
Well, one thing to be aware of is, it's probably not this, but, if the mouse died, then the pointer wouldn't move, but you'd see things like the clock would still be working, things would be moving on the screen. But if the Windows is completely frozen, like the clock isn't moving, nothing's happening, that means the computer just really did crash hard. So hard it couldn't even give you a blue screen of death or anything. It just froze. And that either is a hardware problem or a driver problem. It can't be the CAT program.
Okay.
It has to be... one thing to do is to make sure you have the latest video drivers. It could be a disk problem. It could be a overheating problem. It only happens when you're using this CAT program.
Pretty much, yeah. If I'm multitasking, to the nth degree, then
interesting. So it could be an overheating issue. Or it could be a memory flaw. If you had some bad memory, when the system doesn't normally hit that memory, but it hits it, it just chokes and says, can't go on.
It almost seems more something like that. And then what would you do to correct that?
Well, it's a hardware problem. It's not, unless you, you know, feel pretty comfortable with a soldering iron, I'd suggest bringing the computer in. The problem is this is hard to duplicate. Now, does it happen every single time you use your CAP program?
No, that's the bizarre thing.
Yeah, see, that means you take it into the shop and almost guaranteed nothing will go wrong. And they'll go, well, I don't know what's wrong, lady. It seems to work fine for me.
Of course.
And they'll impugn your honesty and say, you sure it's not working?
Right.
It's really frustrating. It's in their defense, it's frustrating for the techs too, because they can't find a problem, and you're saying there's a problem.
Right.
So I don't know what to say. You can run a memory tester. I mean, they can get pretty geeky on this. You can run a hard drive checker, a memory tester, that kind of thing. I would say, if you want to do it yourself, maybe is it a tower or is it a laptop?
It's a laptop. It's a thing.
Okay. Yeah. It's a ThinkPad. Well, ThinkPads are pretty robust and reliable. Yeah, a laptop, you really can't do anything. You got to bring it into this shop. If you can find a reliable, authorized ThinkPad repair depot, I'd bring it into there.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
So much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know how much help I was, but at least I'm glad to know about cat programs.
Well, yeah.
I know I'm driving cats crazy all over the place. This is this is called Cat Piano. It's an iPad app. See, this is why I spent $500 on an iPad, just for that. It's when you have a modern operating system with memory protection and all of that stuff, the only way you can have a blue screen of death or a freeze is something either wrong with the hardware or a device driver that is writing to ring zero to that protected memory, because no program is supposed to be able to do that. Who let the cat out? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. We'll be back with more calls right after this. Tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Thinking about the Halloween costume. Next week will be Halloween. I think I want to be an angry bird for Halloween. You know that? Wouldn't that be good? That bird, that game, Angry Birds. Have you ever played that? Where the birds are mad at the pigs. It's a bestseller on iPhone, iPad. Android now has Angry Birds. It's just a great game from this Finnish company called Rovio. Actually, I have this is the Halloween version of Angry Birds. So I was thinking maybe just getting a giant red kind of like ball. Because the birds are kind of just, you know, round. And I was thinking a giant red ball. I'd have to get my eyebrows kind of pointed up at the ends because they're angry. So they're, and a beak. Or I could just wear, you know, some kind of a bird costume and swear a lot. I don't know. It's hard. What are you wearing for Halloween? We should talk about that. Maybe next week we'll find out. What geeks wear for Halloween? Let's see here. Corinna in La Habra, California. I think you're next. Hi, Corinna. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hello.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I was listening to you with Sandy earlier, the little old lady.
Yeah, wasn't she great? I wanted to give her more time, but you know.
Yeah,
I gave her as much as I could.
Yeah, that's me. That's why I listen to you, because I need help with all this technology.
Well, I know how sympathetic I am. A lot of times, you know, we geeks, I've been doing this. I got my first computer in 30 years ago, 1980, maybe 79. And so I've been doing this a long time, and I've kind of kept up with it over the past 30 years. So after a while, it just becomes second nature. You forget, really, what it felt like not to know how to use this stuff. So I really have to it's really great to talk to people like Sandy, because it reminds me of how baffling and bewildering this can be the first time you encounter it.
Oh, yes. But, you know, you gave me a really good idea because I get to retire in December of this year. And
yay.
You gave me a really good idea that because I'm in school right now and maybe I'm going to take some computer classes to because I always ask, you know, all my friends are always asking for help on their laptops. And I'm not as inclined, you know, to give them an answer all the time, but I can help them. So maybe that's something.
Wouldn't that be a good thing to do? Yeah. As I was saying, high school kids can do that, but anybody can do this if you like it. And see, this is why I do what I do, because when you teach somebody how to use technology, you're opening a world to them. I mean, for seniors, I look at my mom. She does email. She visits knitting sites. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. She does her books on Quicken. It's a wonderful thing. And it's good for the brain, keeps the brain active. It gives you a whole social life, especially if you're housebound, as Sandy was. It can be a wonderful door to a whole new world of learning and excitement and information. And just it's fun. So
right.
If you understand it, even if, you know, sometimes people say, well, I don't know enough to help. Well, but if you know more than somebody else, you do.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to my question that I had an old HP laptop that crashed and I took it to like three different people. Nobody can figure out what's wrong with it. So I went ahead and with your advice, I bought me my new Dell laptop, which I absolutely love.
Yay.
Yay, yeah. Well, a friend of mine wants to buy my old HP, but because there's still all my information on there and I can't access the computer, how do I?
Oh, that's a real challenge. You know, if you could boot the computer, you could delete everything, but it won't turn on, or what won't it do?
No, it'll turn on, but all it does, it just keeps up, it comes up with this black screen with all this information to, you know, to tell me, well, if you want to restart the computer, press.
Oh, okay. We can erase it. We can erase this. So Corinna, here's what you do. There's a program that actually what you'll do is you'll download this on your new system, your Dell system.
Okay.
And you'll make a boot disk out of it. It has instructions for making a CD that you could then boot on the old computer, and it will run because it sounds like the computer's working fine. It's just the hard drive's kind of in bad shape. It will run, and then it will wipe the drive. And then whoever wants it can have it. And, in fact, it'll probably work fine if they reinstall Windows. It sounds like it's just, you know, which we hear all the time on this show, it's just a hard drive corruption. So the program is called Derek's Boot and Nuke, but it's easy to find if you search for DBAN on Google. So just Google DBAN. That's the abbreviation for Derek, D-A-R-I-K. Derek's Boot and Nuke. What it does is makes a self-contained boot CD that you can then run, and it will wipe the drive so that nobody can get the data that's on it. And that's the best way to give away a computer, is to wipe that drive. So it sounds like even though you can't boot into Windows, you will be able to boot. This doesn't take much. This system will run just fine on almost anything. You might have to go into the BIOS on your computer and say boot from the CD-ROM. That's the only thing you'll have to do, Corinna. DBAN, really a good thing to have handy. You know what's another good thing to have handy? Nod 32 from ESET. It's the best antivirus out there. Yeah, I know you can get an antivirus for free, but let me tell you, it's worth spending a little bit, and that's not much, to get the ultimate in protection, and that's what Nod 32 is. If you go to ESET, that's the company that makes it, ESET.com/Leo, you can get a free trial of Nod 32 right now. And in a discount, I think it's a 10% discount when you use my name. Why is it the best? Well, for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's not just me who thinks this. CNET gave it their editor's choice, 5 out of 5 stars. The Virus Bulletin, which is an independent rating agency, said ESET's Nod 32 has not missed a virus in the wild in 10 years. It's just really good. And not just viruses, worms, trojans, spyware, adware, even phishing scams and rootkits, all are detected, in some cases, even before the signatures are available by Nod 32. And best of all, it does not slow your system down. It's just effective. Try it free for 30 days. Go to ESET.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET. 866-935-ESET. ESET. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. You do. Next week, we'll decide on what Halloween, what geek Halloween costume to wear, okay? Thanks for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.